This is Theo Lloyd-Hughes. This is Relatively Football Podcast. Good morning, good evening, good night, wherever you are. And I am here with my sister, Flo. Hey, Flo, how's it going? Good to see you.
Hello, hello.
What a weekend. I feel like, as always, we're just sort of overwhelmed with the brilliance of football at the moment. It was an amazing quarterfinal of last year's FA Cup, brought to you by this year. You know, there was amazing stuff going on the pitch, and there was a lot of Alex Morgan going off the pitch. Quite a weekend.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll touch on the Alex Morgan show episode one later on in the pod, but there was a lot of funny chat on Twitter, especially from the Americans, saying, geez, will the BBC get over themselves with the Morgan cam? I can't remember who did this meme. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry for the people who are creating hilarious memes and I'm not remembering, but someone did a meme which was like images of the game and it said highlights from Spurs, Arsenal, Arsenal, Spurs. And it was just eight different pictures of Alex Morgan in, you know, big coat, puffer, scarf up to her eyeballs, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, it was pretty funny.
I'd like to give the first shout out of the podcast today to the FA player for merely their stream withstanding the demand of the American audience. I had a really good stream, got through the whole game, managed to watch the whole thing. And, you know, I thought it might have crashed under the pressure of the Alex Morgan stands.
Yeah, but I'm thinking, do you think it will survive Man U this coming weekend? We're not going to touch too much on that, but I am a bit teaser.
I mean, I know Morgan, I think there's been a lot made about Morgan. I know that we said it on the podcast a few weeks ago. I would argue that Press and Heath have even more aggressive fans to some extent than Morgan.
Oh, massively. When just their first press conference, Rich Laverty had to turn off notifications because he had so many Press and Heath stands tweeting him saying, asking them when they're going to play, asking them to basically just for him to report anything. They had to turn notifications off because it was just getting so ridiculous. So I do think that first game potentially this weekend could break the internet.
Break the FA player. We've already done what we said we wouldn't do, which is talk about Alex Morgan and not talk about the game. So I'll start us off with, wasn't Jordan Nobbs' goal one of the best goals you've seen this year? Arguably early goal of the season contender. Just exquisite. What? How did it make you feel? Have you recovered?
Yeah, I think it's a very good goal. I think there were some very good goals in the past year. So I don't know if it's up there with my favourite of the year, but I think it was an exceptional goal. At first I thought, oh, Becky Spencer, could she have done better there? But at the same time, she was completely out of position because she'd gone to help Neville on that side and distribute the ball. And then she was stuck on the edge of the box there, sort of lingering in no man's land. And maybe her reaction could have been a bit better as soon as Arsenal got the ball, as soon as Nobbs got the ball, she could have quickly retreated. But, I mean, Nobbs shot so quickly that she didn't really have a chance to, yeah. She just, as soon as she got the ball, she knew what she was doing. Yeah, the decision-making was so quick. It wasn't, there wasn't really actually enough time for Spencer to realise, shit, I'm completely out of position off my line. So after a second watch, I thought, oh yeah, actually I'm being quite harsh there. And I think, obviously, we know the stupid reputation on Twitter of the kind of criticism that women footballer goalies get. So I didn't want to be that guy. So I knew I was being harsh and I did regret that sort of stance.
I think you're right to sort of highlight the errors, and you know, I think that errors always play a part. Brilliant skill and ingenuity always play a part. But in terms of technique and pure brilliance and quickness of thought, I just thought Jordan Nobbs's finish is probably one of the best we'll see this year. You're right; it's probably not one of the best goals because of what went into it, which was an error by Neville, and arguably bad positioning by the keeper. But the quickness of that finish and the quality of that finish, I want it everywhere. I want it on billboards. I want it on t-shirts. I want it on, you know, I want it on the nightly news.
Yeah, I also, one of my favorite bits was Miedema's pass to Lisa Evans for Evans's first goal. That
beautiful,
that no look defense splitter right in behind, exceptional pass. And it just shows again the kind of player Miedema is. Not only does she score absolute belters and beautiful goals. She's a creator. And I think to see Evans as well in this position, that she didn't play much of last year, and they touched on that in the commentary too. She was out at sort of right wing back a lot of last season. I think it was nice to see her playing a different part and yet another Arsenal hat trick. And I was saying on one of the podcasts I did today that, you know, Arsenal are just so in tune with each other. They could practically play with blindfolds on. I truly think their awareness as a team and their understanding of each other and where each, even Caitlin Ford, that dummy she did, I think for either Evans's second or third, I can't quite remember. I mean, she's only been in the team, you know, she soon after she signed, UK went into lockdown. So she's barely had that much time to play with her teammates and train with them. And she's already got such a good understanding of where everyone is. And I think that's a testament to Montemurro as a coach about this really distinct style of play and culture that he creates with his players. And, you know, so she's already quickly bought into that. And I think that's so impressive.
As your brother, I feel like I can disagree with you. And I feel like if Arsenal did have blindfolds on, they wouldn't be as good. But call me crazy. I actually thought, you know, Spurs for 70 minutes, 69 minutes looked great-ish or resolute or robust, whatever you want to say. And I know we talked about her before, but Alana Kennedy, I think, has really come in and is so no-nonsense and did a good job at plugging, you know, the edge of the box and making Beth Mead have to, you know, keep turning wide or making Miedemark have to move out of position, kind of out of that key space in the box. And Karis Harrop as well, like, I think Karis Harrop's had a few good games. Didn't do great for that Christensen header against Everton, but I think Spurs really made Arsenal work for it. And I don't think it was some, I know Arsenal make beautiful football look easy, but I don't think that 4-0 necessarily told the whole game, or at least, you know.
Completely. I feel quite sorry for Spurs. Yeah, I feel quite sorry for Spurs because what happened after the second goal went in was just a prime example of when you're chasing the game, they make quick triple substitution, bringing Dean on and then bringing two on straight after that.
You're chasing the game.
Yeah, exactly. They were chasing the game and they left themselves completely exposed. And then a team like Arsenal is going to really optimize the gaps that you're creating in behind. So, yeah, I think that was not reflective of the game at all. For the majority, you know, 60 odd minutes, they had kept themselves very compact, very organized, completely agreed. Kennedy, huge presence. I think she's already identified herself as a leader within that team.
Yeah, no doubt.
80 or so caps for Australia. She's only 25, but she's immensely experienced, played in the W League for years, played in the NWSL. I think she's going to have a really big impact on that team. And I think she's going to pull up a lot of those youngsters who are only maybe in their first, second season of WSL who need a bit of guidance and need a bit, I think, of nastiness. I think Spurs are lacking a bit of nastiness and a bit of ruthlessness that other teams have. That they're a nice team with a nice coach and they play quite nice football, but they're not ruthless. And that's the edge that I'm hoping someone like Alana Kennedy, someone like Alex Morgan will bring to them, because we all know the reputation that Alex Morgan has. And I think she can bring some of that that edginess and that bitchiness almost to Ooh, Spurs, because okay. they need it.
Whoopsie. We have very much filled our Alex Morgan quota for today. So do you feel like you saw any of that stubbornness, B-wordness in Manchester City, who beat Leicester 2-1 on Sunday and will be playing Arsenal in the semi-final of last year's FA Cup on Thursday, 7:15 in the UK, 2:15 on the East Coast of the US and midnight in Australia for those Aussies who are trying to see Arsenal play. Do you think City have a chance against Arsenal? Do you think they look ruthless or stubborn, or what do you think?
I think it's going to be an interesting one. I do see Arsenal winning this one just because of what I said earlier about them being so experienced together as a unit. And there's still that sort of gelling that's happening at City. Not only have they got some new players in or some old players returning, but they've got a new coach as well. And I think they're sort of still working out how everyone's going to play together. Exceptional individual talent. Chloe Kelly already making a big impression there, but still perhaps working out where, you know, where she can really control the game from. And the story with City always seems to be, well, this season anyway, with that result against Brighton, is wasting chances. And I think that that won't be the case and the narrative for the whole season. But right now, the scorelines are reflecting perhaps a little bit of pressure they're feeling. And I think in a game like this, I think Arsenal's finishing and that that quality will see them through.
I just wonder, a bit like, you know, the way at World Cups, often teams start slow and they sort of get better as the rounds go on. I just wonder if we're underestimating Manchester City a little bit, because they've not been particularly great so far. And Arsenal, kind of on the other side of the coin, who've been marvellous, have played more soft defences, or at least on paper, worse asides. And I just wonder whether or not sort of your Gemma Bonners and Roebuck in goal are going to maybe... And especially, you know, if Lucy Bronze plays at fullback, like, that's going to be a much, much harder test for us. And I don't know. I kind of have a weird feeling City might do something on Thursday night.
I think it will be close. I think it will be close. I even think going to penalties would be the drama that we would all like to see. But the thing is, it's different when we're repeating in a competition from last season with this FA Cup situation. But in the league, you can't afford to work, you know, warm up to the season, because there aren't enough games. Truly, you have to hit the ground running pretty quickly. And I think not last season that was curtailed and Chelsea won, but the season before that Arsenal won, that was something that negatively impacted Chelsea, was that they couldn't finish out games, they couldn't close out games. And in the end, it came back to bite them. And I think that's what I think we'll see from Man City this season. But next season, with some of the tools that they'll still have, some of the players that they'll still have, and a second season for Taylor, I think that's when we'll see them really maybe regain some of the dominance that they had in the last few years. I don't think they're going to be crap. I just think it's going to take a while to warm up.
Who do you think, staying on the kind of idea that maybe Manchester City could cause an upset? I mean, maybe it's not an upset, but could knock out Arsenal on Thursday. I reckon City probably have the deeper squad. And if you're trying to play two games in 3 or 4 days, and then, you know, there's matches again at the weekend in the league, I just wonder whether or not City might be able to rotate a bit better than Arsenal. And that was one of the things before the season, people, not complained, but maybe said Arsenal might have a small squad. And I just wonder, seeing these two cups and three cups, including the Conti Cup this season, I just wonder if this is the game where you see a little bit more depth from City, a little bit more patience from City, more quality spread across the squad rather than just in the starting 11. And you see them being able to like wear Arsenal out. I don't know. I feel like City are going to maybe be able to really show their true colours, especially with Mewis and Lavelle still acclimatising. Although, I don't know, it's going to have to be not too many goals. If Arsenal get 2 or 3, I think City might not be able to keep up. But I think if it's, you know, decided by 1 goal or 2 goals, I could maybe see City winning. The City game on Sunday was kind of a tough watch for me. That camera angle was incredibly wiggy, made me feel a bit ill. And I wonder if we had a better angle on the Georgia Stanway lob, whether or not we'd be talking about it in the same way as the Jordan Nobbs lob. But we'll never know. We'll never know, because it was shot.
We'll never know. We'll
never know.
The wonders of women's football. You'll never know.
Briefly touching, finishing off on City and their quarterfinal win, I just want to give Jesse PH, aka at Jesse JPH, a shout out on Twitter, who commented on Chloe Kelly's penalty technique, sort of looking like a triple jump hop or a javelin. Please go back and watch that penalty and see what you think. It's an interesting watch. So heading to the other quarterfinals, this is probably the biggest match of the weekend, the one that kind of most people were either watching or were most fascinated in, or definitely as it was playing out, people got very, very excited, which was Everton 2-1 Chelsea. Flo, you didn't see this one coming.
I don't think we did. I think both of us were expecting a good game. We both really like the look of Everton this season. We've been talking them up a lot, but we sort of both agreed that we thought Chelsea were going to win with their strength and depth and with the performances they've already had this season. Obviously, and that big 9-0.
And they went 1-0 up after, you know, only 4 minutes. Aaron Cuthbert, again, looking quite bright.
Yeah, exactly. It had all the makings of, could be a big win for them. But credit to Everton. They stood strong. They were very gallant in their defending. Sandy McIver put in a very good performance in goal. Lots of important blocks. They worked hard and they rode their luck at times. They lived on the edge at times, but they also had more than enough chances. Hayley Rasso had that chance to win it even before Govan got that header. So I think they deserved their win. Chelsea will be frustrated because they had chances, but at the same time, it's not like Everton just parked the bus for 90 minutes and then, you know, it was a smash and grab. They played well, and I think they deserved that. And I think it's, I said before, FA Cup prime competition for Everton to go for this season. And I think they're going to win one of the two FA Cups that are up for grabs. And perhaps this is a sign of the first one. And I would give them a good chance of beating either Man City or Arsenal in the final if they make it through. I think they have the potential now with what they're building and the names they've brought in. I think they have a really good chance.
I think Chelsea have struggled a little bit at fullback this year. I think a lot of their goals start on that wing and they're being spaced there. And obviously Jess Carter, it was cool to see her make a start in the centre-back position for Chelsea, but maybe didn't have the best day with both the goals being crossed in and headed. Lucy Graham with the first, and then my favourite, Valerie Gauvin, with the winner. I thought you definitely saw where Chelsea can be exposed. And I think having Rasso kind of, it was just a perfect matchup. Rasso could just ran riot all game. Her dribbling was incredible. It bought Everton time. It opened up space. She was able to play between the lines. She was able to kind of cut in and make the Chelsea defenders have to shift. She was able to cut back out and draw players wide and then put that ball in. And I just think you saw maybe Chelsea with a little bit of vulnerability at the back when we've talked so much about their attacking players. And then I think you also saw where Everton have quality, which is maybe in the wide areas. And actually, I thought the centre midfielders did a really good job at making sure that Pernille Harder and Kerr couldn't kind of have their way and pull Everton out. They stuck to their defensive lines really, really well. I also think, again, going back to this idea of squad depth, Willie Kirk is rotating his side. He didn't necessarily like just play his like quote-unquote best players on Sunday morning. And so I think that deserves a lot of credit too. Valerie Gauvin has 2 goals in 80 minutes across 3 games. Like, I don't really know how he's managing to do this. And I don't know if this was the plan to have her as some sort of super sub. But he's
really... Yeah, I was thinking that as well. I don't know if it's a fitness thing and she's not ready to start or this is going to be her role all season. I think it's almost like Rasso comes on and tires the Chelsea or whoever's defence out and is an absolute terrier. She's had chances in all the games she's played. She's running in behind. She's running at defenders as well. And then Govan comes on when they're, you know, completely dead and has that kind of killer finish to see the game off. I don't know what the tactic is, but whatever it is, it's working. And he's almost like he's got the perfect player for every single role. Sorensen
has brilliant. Really brilliant on Sunday.
Yeah, and she's been a bit of a super sub as well recently. She didn't start the last WSL game. She came on and then got an assist. So he knows how to change games, and I think that's very important. He knows maybe if it's not working or if they need something different to get the win, he knows who he can pull on from the bench. And the narrative this season with Chelsea is how they're going to keep everyone happy within that squad. And since Jess Carter arrived from Birmingham a couple of seasons ago, she hasn't played that much. She did have an important block on the weekend, but she hasn't played that much. And so she is out of game time and out of experience in matches. But part of having so many cup competitions this season, it provides an opportunity to play someone like Jess Carter, give them game time, keep them happy. But at the same time, they've got Emma Hayes has a distinct back four that she likes to use that are successful. And sometimes there'll be injuries and she'll have to rotate it a bit. But normally she's got a solid four that she can lean to start. And mixing that up, bringing in new faces, bringing in old faces who've been part of the squad for a long time, it can mess with things a little bit and it can get a little bit disorganised.
Mm. No, totally. And, you know, Clara Emsley as well, still going to be kind of slowly being acclimatizing to this Everton side. I think we're going to see a lot out of them. One last shout out from the Everton broadcast. Wonderful broadcast on the BBC and the FA player. Both semi-finals.
No, it wasn't. It was the club stream.
Oh, I had it on the FA player. Maybe that's just in the US.
Did you not have Gabby George?
I had that was going to be exactly what I was going to say. I wanted to give Gabby George a shout out.
It was the club's dream because I didn't realise for ages because I thought, oh, it's funny that they've just got two Scousers doing this. And then I realised, no, it's actually the club's dream that the FA player were using. So that's why they had their own weird graphics and why
Gabby George and Lancashire?
This other guy. I think she's quite Scouse though.
I thought maybe she might be from Lancashire, but she definitely obviously knew the players and was talking. She said we in regards to Everton. But I think, I don't know if she's Scouse. But I was just
Well, the other guy was definitely Scouse.
Yeah, I was going to give Gabby George a shout out because she was wonderful.
She was hilarious.
It's great. We had Danielle Carter and Kaz Carney on the Lioness in scrimmage stream. And I think it's great to see some of the more different commentating aspects. And on the subject of kind of surprises and great to see new faces, Birmingham City will be in the FA Cup 1920 semi-final facing off Everton. Hannah Hampton, I thought, was a real standout in goal just coming off the England camp. I thought was amazing. On the subject of mixing teams up, do you feel like Hope Powell made too many changes for Brighton and maybe this should have been a game they should have won? They beat Birmingham 2-0 2 weeks ago and yet they, you know, here they are losing on penalties.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's nice for Birmingham to get this far. We've touched on the massive upheaval there at the club and the big changes over the last few years for a club that's had really big successes in cup competitions and in women's football in general. So this is great for them to sort of be back where they belong in the latter stages of competitions. So I'm happy for them and I'm really happy for the fan base because it's been a bit bleak over the last couple of years. And yeah, perhaps Brighton should have made the most of the good form that they're in and sticking to some of that. And for them to get to a semi-final, only in their second season of being in the WSL, that would have been huge. So I imagine Hope Powell's a bit disappointed about that because who knows when the next cup restarts in a few weeks, how they're going to be positioned there and how they're going to be doing in that environment in the midst of a Conti Cup and the midst of WSL as well. This was such a good opportunity to continue that form. So I think she's going to be really disappointed. But I'm really happy for Birmingham. Apologies to Craig Hadley because we called them underdogs, but only because of the current situation they're in and off the back of last season. But obviously, with the huge history that Birmingham City has, shout out Marcus Bignot, former QPR player and legend and obviously coached Birmingham City women for a bit. So it's great that such an English dynasty is getting back up where it belongs. And also huge credit to Carla Lord and the immense job she's had to inherit and the work she's had to do with those players. And it's a big confidence boost for them going forward in their fight for survival.
No, it's like, I agree with everything you said there. And I am excited for the fans and like proper football fans, proper people who care about this club and worry about where it's going. And this is what you dream of. You know, you want to be in these big games. You want to be in games that matter. And I was really excited for Birmingham, even if I have a bit of a soft spot for Brighton. I think when I saw the teams come out, I was a little bit surprised, like I said, to see Hope Powell rest arguably her best players. She rested Megan Walsh, who had been so good in goal, hadn't conceded a goal yet this season. And then, you know, they concede two, although she didn't change the back four. She just changed mostly her attacking players. So I was kind of surprised to see that, but I thought Birmingham did a really good job and looked like, you know, I think we were a bit worried about Bristol and Birmingham maybe looking like they'd completely drop off, but I think this will be huge for Birmingham's team morale. And yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to that semi-final because kind of like I was saying about maybe we wrongly thought Brighton would maybe take care of business, but I think Birmingham could take Everton to penalties and you never know and get to Wembley. And that is really, really exciting to see. And you want to see the league maybe look a little bit bigger. That game is going to be on Wednesday before City Arsenal on Thursday. It's Birmingham versus Everton and it's 7:15 in the UK, 2:15 on the East Coast of the United States and just after midnight in Australia. Anything else you want to talk about with the upcoming semi-finals or last week's quarterfinals? Cool. Well, we're going to take a very short little break, just catch our breath, and then we'll just round up a little bit of the what was going on in the NWSL in America over the weekend. And we'll see you in a bit. And So it was another bumper. They just keep coming, these bumper weekends in the United States of America with the National Women's Soccer League. I was actually at a live football match, Flo. I know you've been doing it for BBC London, but I have to admit it was a really overwhelming experience.
Please share with us your Houston Dash experience, play-by-play. How did it all work?
So it was kind of weird at first. Like, I haven't been to live sport in so long now. I'd kind of forgotten, like, the floodlights made me stop in my tracks. Like, I felt a bit like a child. Like, the whole floodlights and, like, the seats and the... I know you always give a good update on, like, the grounds people and what they're doing, but the pitch was just so striking.
Totally logistics out now.
Yeah. I mean, the quality... I mean, can we get some grounds people on the podcast? The people that take care of that
grass. We should, you know. We should. I love that.
Where are the siblings? Where are the siblings who are taking care of the grass? The grass at the BBVA Houston Dash Stadium was impeccable. And I honestly felt like I spent the first 10 minutes just looking at the way the light reflected off the seats and kind of looking at the way the sky shone through the kind of the metal and the steel of the stadium and just like the way the grass smelled. I love that when you first walk into a football stadium, your nose gets acclimatized to it. When you first walk into a football stadium, you can kind of just smell the grass when the wind blows for the first time.
Did you drive there? How did you get there? Take me through the logistics.
So the relative logistics of it was I got COVID tested last week. So I got my negative results on Thursday, and then I drove on Saturday into Houston, and then went to the game. Takes about 3/4 of a petrol tank to get to Houston, so I didn't have to get any petrol. And then went to the game. I parked my car right by the stadium, got in a couple of hours early. They take your temperature when you get there. You have to fill out like a tracing sheet. So you have to tell them where you've been. I know I think you've had to do this for some games as well. Like, you're not meant to take public transport, stuff like that. You do a tracing sheet, and then we were in what was called like three zone. And so in that zone, you don't mix with anyone else. You're like, it's just the media. And there was probably only about seven or eight journalists, seven or eight photographers. It wasn't a big crew. And they kind of have like water bottles for you, but otherwise, you know, there's no like food being served and stuff like that. So yeah, it felt really safe. Like I said, I felt myself being quite paralyzed by the kind of the beauty of going back to live football. And I also was just really engaged in like the things you don't see on the broadcast. So for example, both the Orlando Pride side and the Houston Dash didn't come out for the national anthem. And that's the kind of thing, I don't even know if they're putting the national anthem on broadcast anymore. But see, being in the stadium, I mean, I don't even know why they're playing the national anthem anymore, but being in the stadium and seeing the players arrive like with no kind of like fanfare, not during an anthem, I thought was really moving. And all the Dash players were wearing these shirts that say you don't have to be black to be outraged. And they've recently announced that they're giving all their prize money this season to the NAACP of Houston. And so I think, again, all these kind of moments of messaging and meaning and like the off the pitch stuff, I thought really came through. And then once the game started, like, I just, you know, counted my lucky stars. I was living in a world where I get to see Marta play in real life, because that was probably the highlight. I mean, the Dash were amazing and there were some great goals and it was a lot of fun, but Marta for about the first 20 minutes was just incredible. And it was a lot of fun seeing her just ball out. Other highlights.
Love that.
Oh yeah, I mean, just really amazing. It was kind of a shame. There's been a lot of controversy about the Pride complaining because the Dash actually had a player test positive last week. So all their players had to get a double negative before they could go back to practice. But a lot of the Pride players, including Sydney Leroux, did not travel to Houston. So they only had five substitutes named. They only had a 16-player squad. And to be honest, Houston looked really fatigued and kind of mad. Ashlyn Harris said after the game, we as a team need to stop blank, I can't say the swear word, ourselves when we're on the ball. And probably the only other like player highlight after seeing Marta in the flesh, which was incredible, was hearing Ashlyn Harris in the flesh. Empty stadium, bar a few hundred people, and you could hear Ashlyn Harris all the way back in, you know, anywhere in Texas, you could hear her screaming. I wrote down some of her quotes because there was one where she just kept shouting energy. She would just keep going, energy, energy, and then out, out. And then she would say, like, switch on, switch on. It was kind of amazing so watching, hearing Ashton Harris was fun. But yeah, that was kind of my Houston experience. It was pretty overwhelming, and I should be back at the next game against North Carolina on Sunday, doing the same thing, getting tested again this week.
Is that in Houston again?
Yeah, that'll be their final. So Houston are now undefeated at home. They beat the Pride 3-1. It was a pretty one-sided game at the end of it. And they got one more home game against North Carolina in the kind of quasi autumn series that is happening in the NWSL. Away from Houston, the Utah Royals returned home for the first time since the Challenge Cup, since the first time their owner is in the process of leaving the club for racist and sexist allegations. They got a 2-2 draw with OL Reign from Seattle. This was sort of a bonkers game. I don't know if you caught any of this. There was 4 goals in the opening 28 minutes. Utah came out hot, you know, despite all the emotion. Ziara King got her first start. Really cool player to watch. Really, really outspoken off the pitch. So talented on the pitch. She's actually been a big part of the NWSL Black Players movement coming together and the removal of Deloy Hansen as an owner in Utah. And so, yeah, she scored a really, really nice goal, although there was pretty soft defending from the Rain, kind of let the cross come in and didn't really pick her up. But amazing leap and header gave Utah the lead. And then, the Rain came straight back. And I really recommend going to try and find Bethany Bolsa's goal, because Sofia Huerta has an amazing... Oh, so brilliant. This is why one of those things I've watched football is when people do things that you could never imagine. And Sofia Huerta lets the through ball come through and then opens up her legs and dummies it and rolls it through her legs. And the defender, Kate DeFalva, is just nowhere. She has no idea Huerta's going to do this. And the ball rolls through to Balsa, who then like calmly slots it home. So that was a real highlight in a kind of very fun, you know, chaotic game. But probably not a bad point for the Utah Royals, who were really, really poor against Portland last week. And then in the final NWSL game of the weekend, the Washington Spirit got a draw with Chicago, 1-1. Not a bad result for both sides. I think Chicago were really good the week before, so maybe they thought they'd get a little bit more out of the game. Kalia Watt, after all that chat, I thought had another really good game. She had a one-on-one with the keeper where if she was better with her left foot, it would have been a goal, but she sent it wide. Sarah Gordon as well. It was great to see her back. She's from Chicago as well, kind of a bit of a legend there at the club. And she had a really, really nice game, just cleaning up everything at the back. It was another good weekend of NWSL action. There's a midweek NWSL game, which is pretty rare, but because of the bad air quality and fires in the West Coast, Portland Thorns had their match with OL Reign rescheduled. So that game will be tomorrow night. It's going to be 10 p.m. on the East Coast, 3 a.m. if you are a late night person in the UK, and 1 p.m. lunchtime on Thursday in Australia. So that's kind of nice for the Aussies. And that's on Twitch, wherever you are in the world. And that could be fun. And that's your NWSL
random. I have a question for you.
Yeah.
I have a question for you. With everything that's going on in the US, which is a lot, whether that's the pandemic, Black Lives Matter movement, other racial injustices happening in the country, wildfires, probably some other stuff I've missed, although the election.
Hurricanes,
the election. There's a lot going on. And we've only seen a hint of that in the UK with most notably the pandemic and also Black Lives Matter in the UK, which understandably hasn't been as big as it has been in the US, but still has had an impact on football. So I want to know what sort of impact is this having on the players? How are we seeing that maybe on the pitch, on social media? You know, are we getting to the point where players are just saying this is actually mentally a lot to deal with and I kind of don't want to be here right now, whether that's playing in Portland because it's so polluted and my family are having to evacuate, or it's, you know, I'm finding everything quite traumatic, etc.
That's a great question. I think a little bit of both. I think seeing the Orlando Pride players refuse to play and travel to Houston, I think, is a more candid version of what you're talking about. So you're seeing people say, hey, there's a pandemic going on. My football, my family, whatever my football is not more important than my family, I guess, is the answer to that question. In regards to activism, right now, players believe their activism is linked to their participation on the pitch. In other sports, you know, people like Kyrie Irving or you know, have chosen not to play so that they, because they don't want to distract from activism or from politics. Whereas the kind of getting out to vote, or this is what you, how you should vote, or this is the injustice we want to see, you know, especially in light of the Breonna Taylor hearing, a lot of the NWSL players are sticking to the matches as a way of talking about this. Bethany Bolso scored for OL Reign, and Ziara King, who scored for Utah Royals, you know, go follow them on Twitter. They're two of the most outspoken players. In regards to sort of safety and everything else, I think, and mental health, again, you know, players like Julie Ertz, after the Challenge Cup, thanked their therapist and the money that the clubs at the Challenge Cup put towards mental health support in the tournament bubble. So it's definitely something people are talking about. Time will tell whether or not it is something that needed to be talked about more, or needed to be more implemented into the way these players are handling their sport and handling the current moment in world history. It's hard to say there's one blanket feeling amongst all the players. Everyone's kind of taking it differently. And actually something Ashlyn Harris said after the game was she's been disappointed by seeing Houston Dash players' Instagram feeds where they're not wearing masks and being out on the town. And obviously one player tested positive. So I think maybe you're seeing this moment, and we haven't quite had it with one player calling out another player in regards to like Black Lives Matter. But I think you're seeing a lot of transparency and a lot of conversation about like the culture of the league and the women who are out there and playing and how they want to comment on all the issues you just mentioned. And so I don't know, every week it seems like it's getting turned up a notch, but right now it's kind of multifaceted. Does that answer your question?
No, that answers my question. And I completely understand where all of them are coming from, because at the end of the day, I think we get too used to treating professional athletes, but especially footballers, kind of like robots, and expect them just to bounce back from everything, whether that's because they're paid a ton of money, like the majority of men's players in the Premier League or in the top teams around the world, or just because we think they're so resilient because they're professional athletes and therefore they can handle anything. But I think sometimes it's really important to take a step back, and actually I find so much of what's going on in the world quite hard to deal with. And from a point of view in the UK, it seems like what we're going through is so much more exacerbated in the US with everything else that's going on. I can't imagine what it'd be like if we had wildfires and an election to worry about on top of everything. It's just, it's a really intense and stressful experience. And to have them still playing despite all of that is pretty amazing that they're willing to do it. Really.
Yeah, there's only a couple more weeks of the National Women's Soccer League in the US. So the women will be winding down come election, kind of the last couple of weeks, 3 weeks building up to the election. But I think this is just the beginning in regards to a lot of activism. I think like a lot of players are only really just finding their voices, or, you know, maybe like figuring out what their mental health is or what anxiety looks like to live in America. And that goes beyond just the sports people and the athletes as well. Like, I think a lot of people I know, or a lot of people in this city, or politicians, whatever you want to say, you know, however much you want to expand that community, are coming to terms with like race and health and inequality and, you know, all the aspects in which they intersect. And so sport and capitalism is kind of just one aspect of that. And I, to some extent, I think the league is in a good place, or is heading towards a good place to being able to talk about that. But it's going to be something to look out for. And yeah, November will be weird.
The WSL, I'll tell you, the WSL and women's football over here is a lot of catching up to do, because we haven't seen enough of that activism yet, I think. And hopefully maybe some of the US players who've come over might be able to inspire some of that, because I've always found that the US women's national team and what they've gone through with the equal pay fight and litigation, I think they're more kind of born activists because of that. I think that it's in their blood now. It's in the culture of that team to be fighters and to be activists. And I would like to see more of that from women's football culture in England. And I think a lot of fans would too. I think there's pockets of it, especially when it comes to LGBTQ inclusion, but I would like to see a bit more when it comes to race and it comes to other social issues. I would like to see a little bit more of that, because I think people are a little bit worried about probably reactions on social media and perceptions, but at the end of the day, you know, you need to fight for what you believe in. And I truly believe lots of people probably do believe in a lot of those causes, but perhaps they're scared to engage because they're too worried about what other people might
think. Well, yeah, and I think what you touched on, you know, touches on what you said about the men, and that the idea that, like, these women don't earn as much, and so their capitalist currency or their stock, they feel like, could be under threat. You know, if they were to say something, they might not be able to play football, or might lose, might be looked down upon. And I think we saw that in Utah, where the owner of the team was saying he would not market unattractive players and he would say racial slurs. And so to see the Utah players, especially a rookie 22-year-old player, Ziara King, speak up, you know, it shouldn't be Ziara King's responsibility to speak up to her boss and say, hey, this is not how we play the game.
And even in men's football in England, we have kind of Marcus Rashford and Raheem Sterling and not that many others. And that's these guys are multimillionaires. So even when you feel quite secure in your position and your place in society, that even won't necessarily change anything. So I completely get that. And I just hope that we're going to see a bit of a turning point for women's football in this country, because we touched on it before, but it is a very white sport. And how these social issues are addressed impacts that as well. So I would like to see a bit more of that activist spirit and that inclusive spirit that we see more of in the US women's football culture.
Yeah, I think this is going to be something that you and I will return to a lot throughout the podcast, throughout this year. And I think it's going to keep evolving. It's hard to just say, like, oh, this is the way we respond to it. You know, I think the way we respond, I mean, look at what happened with QPR last week, in regards to, like, what happened with Sky Sports and taking the knee. Taking the knee is now, you know, we're very acclimatized to it. And to keep evolving your activism, or to keep evolving making women's football not so white and more diverse, it takes change, it takes adjusting and molding your activism in different ways. And so we can't just keep taking the knee, you know, at the whistle every match. And so I look forward to seeing, you know, how we, you know, as outsiders and people, you know, with the power and the money in the league game, keep pushing change. Well, yeah, this feels like a really good discussion that I definitely, like I said, I think we'll see a lot of. But otherwise, I think we're going to wrap up the episode. And I think we'll have another mini pod out this week to wrap up the semifinals and then back to kind of regular broadcasting and hopefully a special interview next week as well.
Yeah, very, very busy this week with lots of women's football. The calendar and the fixture list is already a mess, as always.
It's piling up.
It's getting pretty crazy. But yeah, we'll be back later this week with a little update and a little look forward to some tasty WSL fixtures this weekend.
Yeah, sounds good. Have a great rest of your day, Flo. Always good to see the fam.
Thanks. You too. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday.
See ya.